Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 16th of June. Last month, the DNA of a suspected serial killer was linked to a seventh woman murdered in Milwaukee, part of a major investigation into unsolved homicides that go back 23 years. The unknown male suspect may be linked to more murders. Testing continues on DNA from about two dozen other unsolved prostitute homicides. Investigators at Milwaukee Police Headquarters have fielded dozens of tips to a hotline established for the case. All that is known is the suspect is a male. All but one of the victims were African-American women working as prostitutes. The seventh, a white teenage runaway. Investigators have said they think the suspect had sex with that victim, but another person killed her. The Benedict Center has been working for a long time to help people who are working on the streets and help people who have been victims of sexual abuse and had problems with drugs, etc. It was founded on the principles of restorative justice some 30 years ago, and they help accused men, women, and youth find strength in their own personal spirituality in the Milwaukee County Jail, act as the conscience of the criminal justice system. They are concerned, of course, about what's been going on the streets of Milwaukee. Many women who are working as prostitutes have experienced childhood sexual abuse. They get into a downward spiral of depression, drug addiction, bad relationships with controlling men, no jobs, no homes, and difficulty raising their own children. The director of the center has called many of these women desperate women. And actually, the money is pretty lousy. We're going to be talking about, obviously, our interest in this is something that was piqued by the homicides and the have not been, evidently the investigation is going on, but no one has been found who murdered these women. We're going to talk about what drives people to the streets and how you can turn your life around and how it is really tied into so many other significant problems. The Benedict Center has a women's harm reduction program. They perform vital services in Milwaukee as an alternative to incarceration for women in conflict with the law. They also have a sister project that has recently, thanks to Congresswoman Gwen Moore, been given a grant, a larger grant, to deal with women who have been working the streets. And we have two guests with us this hour to talk about this very large topic. Donna Hippis is director of the Women's Harm Reduction Program and also the Sister Project. Donna, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And Siobhan is also joining us in studio. Siobhan has been working as a volunteer with the Sister Project for quite some time now and is trying to help women out of dangerous situations and has family members who have been working the streets and knows what's going on there. Siobhan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me as well. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's start with this murderer who evidently is still around, and there were quite a few murders back in the 1990s in the city of Milwaukee that also weren't solved. Can you tell me what people thought, people you know who work the streets, and what the Benedict Center thinks about the investigation that's going on here of the serial killer who's killing prostitutes in the city and may have killed quite a few people?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I really do believe that Chief Flynn is very serious about finding this individual. I have no reason to doubt his intentions. I don't really know what the status of the investigation is at this point. I'm certainly hoping that it's ongoing. But I think overall, we remember full well 12 years ago when, again, this kind of situation made the headlines, made the news. And we had ourselves experiencing two of the women who had been involved in our program found murdered.
Oh.
One actually found in a trash can on the north side. And I still get chills when I think of that. What a terrible, terrible way to end your life. And that made a lot of noise for a short period of time, and then nothing. Now, because Chief Flynn is saying that ways of determining things are so much more sophisticated at this point, I have my fingers crossed that there really will be a concerted effort. But there's always that little part of me that understands that because of who we are as human beings, it's very titillating, it's very sensational to have these things in the press and on the 6 o'clock news. but then people go off into their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what my whole point is that this is a very serious situation. We talk about it a lot because one of the premises of the work that we do is safety. We want people to be safe. Even if they're still out on the street, we want them to really be much more aware, to take care of themselves, to really be safe in all aspects. We would prefer that they're no longer on the street, and hopefully after building a relationship of trust, that may happen. But safety is our biggest concern, and that's the first conversation that we have with people. And I want people to understand that even though the serial killer is out there, and we are very concerned, and we find this to be very frightening. Every single day a woman is on the street, she is in a very precarious position. You don't have to have a serial killer to get beaten, to get stabbed, to get choked. These are things that happen on way too often a basis for the women that we work with. And so for us, safety, safety, safety. And the looming aspect of having this terrible monster out there is a part of that, but we also want to make sure that every single day we start thinking about what can I do to be a little bit more safe today.
Right. And of course, a goal would be to be able to find a meaningful job that pays a decent wage, that has a
yes.
little bit more sense of
and
fulfillment.
That has always been the goal, and it has always been difficult. But right now, with the economy the way it is, it's becoming much more difficult for a lot of the
right.
women in my program. However, that doesn't mean that there isn't some kind of hope. And what we want to do is to be able to reach out and to build those relationships. And so having people out on the street, having the women who are out there know that there is somebody there. If it's Tuesday and if I'm on Greenfield Avenue, I'm going to find the Sisters Project. That's very important to us because it's the first step to trying to build the relationship that's really needed to have somebody come in out of that cold or out of the hot streets and really start to be able to do something to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Siobhan, you've known people, family members who have worked the streets. What prompts somebody to go to the streets? Is it they're trying mostly to get drug money? Is that the connection? Or is it they can't find other kinds of jobs, or they were abused when they were children? What is the motivation?
Well, with the people that I've talked with, the majority of them say that it starts from an abusive home. It all starts with an abusive background, physical, mental, emotional abuse. And instead of going to school and getting an education, they tend to go to the streets for the attention that they're lacking. They start out usually with marijuana, a little alcohol, and then they tend to graduate into harder drugs.
To sort of kill the pain?
Sort of numb the pain,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And also they become, they adapt to that abusive nature that they've had to deal with all of their lives. So they adapt to that abusive nature, and they look for a drug to numb it, but they keep going back to it. There goes the pimps, the abusive boyfriends or abusive mates, because they've become so accustomed to it. Without it, they feel like they're not loved, they're not cared for, they're not worthy of being treated like a decent person
mm-hmm.
without this abuse.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't hit me, you don't love me. You know, if you don't call me bad names, you don't love me. And then they keep going back to the drugs because part of them wants to forget it, but something keeps drawing them back to it. People tend to adapt and then actually cling to their abuser after dealing with it for so long, they don't know how to deal with the real world, what's really good for them, what's happening out there for them.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to think that this is it. This is all I deserve. I'm not worthy of anything better. I'm not worthy of a nice job or nice clothes or just being loved for me. I'm not worthy of that. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. So the Women's Harm Reduction Program, I mean, it's a tall order if that's all you've known in your life to realize that there is something else out there. There may be something else out there for you. How do you present that alternative possibility to
Probably
women?
Slowly. I think the first thing that we want to do, I mean, I had said safety was first, but then after that, I think it's to get women to recognize their own strengths and abilities.
Mm-hmm.
People can't survive all of the things that they've survived without being incredibly strong individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to do as staff is to help them uncover what these strengths are. And then slowly but surely take a look at, well, how can I use them for something different? You know, we don't only want to survive. We want to be able to go out there and to reach other goals. And so I think what Siobhan said is absolutely what I've experienced over 18 years, is that people are so used to a way of life that it is difficult to envision something different. And that's really our goal. Our goal is to say it can be different. And that's why people like Siobhan and other women who have graduated from our program and who have gone on to create safe lives for themselves often come back and talk, often come back and just say, hey, it's possible. It's hard. It's extraordinarily hard, but it's possible. And I think that patience is another piece. Because when people are trying to change habits, now, I'm sure you've tried to change habits somewhere along the line.
Sure.
I know I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that even when it's a habit that isn't threatening to me, it's very difficult to break it, to develop it. And when you think of the kind of habits that people over a period of 18 or 25 or 35 years have had, just being able to think about what it takes to move away from there. In many cases, it means leaving everyone that you know.
Completely uprooting.
Mm-hmm. Completely
mm-hmm.
uprooting.
Mm-hmm.
And who of us can easily do that?
Right.
I mean, could you walk away and say, well, I can't talk to my mother anymore. I can't hang out with my sisters anymore. I can't be with the man that's been taking care of me for the last 10 years anymore. Because then all of a sudden you're stripped bare.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you have? What are we replacing it with? And I think that's the most difficult piece, is that understanding that even if I want to do it, I want to do it with every part of my body, but can I maintain it?
Yeah. Siobhan, tell me your story. Were you harmed?
No, fortunately, I was not. The drugs, yes, I was into the drugs. The street life itself, yeah. I escaped prostitution, I should say. I didn't get to that point. But I believe if I had not had the finances available to me that were, I probably would have gone down that path.
Mm-hmm.
No one, when you're out there in the streets, you know, you're subjected to everything. Prostitution, abuse, you're subjected to everything. So fortunately, I escaped the prostitution. Unfortunately, I did live that life of drugs and alcohol and wild parties, things of that nature. And with me, I mean, it started out with an abusive background. You know, I had abusive step parents and things of that nature, and it became my escape. I started out as so many others, drinking and smoking marijuana. You know, and it would sort of numb the brain. Well, I wouldn't think about it because at one point, That's all that I would think about. How could he do that to me? How could they say this? It sort of controlled my everything. So the drugs started to numb me where I wouldn't think sure. about it so much. Now I've developed a habit. So now, mm-hmm. In order to maintain this habit, this good feeling that I get, so that I don't think about all the bad things, then I tend to do other things to maintain that habit. Ergos, prostitution or boosting, where they go to the stores and they shoplift. They call it boosting. Ergos, things of those natures. Mm-hmm. So down the line, if you don't escape, you will, end up incarcerated.
Right.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that people have to understand is how many of the women that we work with had such serious problems at home that they really did turn to marijuana, they did turn to alcohol at very young ages. When you talk to people and you say, well, when did you first start smoking weed? 12.
That was my age.
12 years old.
I was 12.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you know that the, we hope that the average 12-year-old is not doing this. And so there has to be a whole set of personal problems that are going with it so that that 12-year-old finds escape in using that particular drug. Now, if I'm looking at a 25-year-old young woman who is sent to me through the court, and she tells me that she's been using marijuana and alcohol since she was 12 or 13. And then she, because she was with the different boyfriends, started smoking crack when she was 17 or 18. Look at that. You already have a 12-year pattern at age 25. Mm-hmm. And often women tell me that, they didn't have a job. They left school when they were maybe freshmen in high school. And they've been relying on other people to support them in one way or another. And then it gets to the point where I need money. And a friend says, oh, I have a real easy way for you to make some quick money. And so they go out and they start prostituting. And the money is good. But a number of women will tell me, but I had to be stoned in order to do it. Mm-hmm. Because if I thought about it, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And then when they want to stop, often something else happens. It's either a family emergency. I've talked to women who decided that they had to go out one more time because they needed things for home. One beautiful young woman who was in just an absolute crisis situation, and she went out that one more time because she didn't have diapers for her baby. And she wanted to get $20 so she could buy diapers. And, of course, she got in the wrong car and she got arrested. So no diapers that night and an awful lot of humiliation and pain afterwards. But that's not uncommon, that they've already in their head said, I don't really want to do this anymore. But something happens. Maybe pressure is put on. Siobhan was talking to me earlier, and I want you to talk about this, Siobhan, about the idea of the boyfriend. We do see women who have actual pimps, but more than that, it's usually the boyfriend. The boyfriend who may be the one person that has ever treated them like royalty. But then somewhere in that relationship, the boyfriend is saying, well, now I need you to bring in some money to this household. And I don't really care how you bring that money in, but I need this much money. I remember one woman a few years ago. Thankfully, she's safe now, and she doesn't even live in Milwaukee anymore. But she was telling me that her boyfriend would tell her that she had to come home with X amount of money, or he would not allow her back into the apartment. Uh-huh. And so she would walk on 35th Street from Clybourne up to North Avenue and back and solicit business until she got that amount of money, and then she was allowed to go home. And I mean, when you live this way, how do you see yourself, and how do you ever see yourself of moving away from that unless somebody is really offering right. you opportunities?
Right. Let's pause for a moment and return and welcome phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our guests are Donna Hippis, Director of the Women's Harm Reduction Program and the Sister Project at the Benedict Center here in Milwaukee. Siobhan is also with us, who's been through the Women's Harm Reduction Program and is working and has for some time as a volunteer at the Benedict Center. We also have an email address you can use. That address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, the author of Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. Let's welcome phone calls for our guests. 800-486-8655 is the number, and Ray from River Falls is our first caller. Hi, Ray.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I've been kind of befriended and involved with a young lady who seems to be in this lifestyle. I've known her for about 2 years, and I've tried to financially assist her to find a different way of doing things, but it seems that there's a draw to this thing that's just incredible. And she more is involved in the stripper line of work, but I can't say that it doesn't involve into more of that. But I agree with what your guest said about the drug thing. It seems like drugs is a constant part of her daily life. But what, you know, and there's a big problem with, I guess, her being honest about what she's really into. But yeah. When does a person say enough and give up, or do you just kind of have to turn off your feelings and be there when they fall back down and come calling again?
Well, personally, I think that I admire the fact that you want to help, and so thank you for that. I think that you have to always realize that we cannot do for anybody. We can offer support. We can offer help. We don't want to turn our backs on people, but we also don't want to be such a crutch or such an enabler that there's no reason to move away from what they're doing. And it's a very delicate tightrope to walk. And so, not knowing the situation, all I can do is say that, you know, you need to be a friend, but you also need to take care of yourself. And so you may end up having to step back and just be there for moral support on occasion, and continue to offer opportunities. You know, I don't know what's in your area, but I'm sure there must be some kind of meetings or treatment or some kind of support system, and maybe just continuing to say, hey, maybe you'd like to go to a meeting. Maybe you'd like to see something different.
Siobhan?
Or maybe go with her. Take her to the meetings. Join her.
Mm-hmm. Like counseling or going to school or something like that, huh?
Well, absolutely.
Yes, and I think if people just realize that there are people out there that are willing to help, they may not be able to jump at that opportunity right this minute, but if it continues to be there and if you continue to be the kind of person that says, here it is, you never know what's going to happen.
Glad you're having the program.
Thanks. Thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. When I'm thinking, the more I'm thinking about this, the more I realize how incredibly dangerous this is. I mean, this comes to light because of a serial killer, which scares the heck out of all of us. But it's just a dangerous situation. You have no idea who you're winding up with, do
you? Absolutely. No, you don't. You don't know what car you're going into and what's going to happen once you're in it. And I think that's what is so much more concerning to me at this point in time. It is very easy to be raped at gunpoint. It is very easy to have whatever little money you have or drugs stolen from you. It is easy to have somebody who is wanting you to perform a sexual service to all of a sudden start choking you. And if you're in a situation where it's difficult for you to run, that can be extraordinarily have a bad, bad, bad end.
Yeah, it sure can. What does, and I know that you've told women, and don't you know there's a serial killer here, What does that do? I mean, obviously it's sensational in a way, but it's also, it's horrendous, and it's been going on for a long period of time. You would think that that would lodge in the mind somewhere of people who are working the streets.
Because they always think, it's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. It won't be, that was her. That's not going to be me. And they mm-hmm. always seem to think they know what they'll do, what their reaction will be if approached by whomever. The wrong way. They think that they have the answers. But you never know what your reaction is going to be until you are faced with that situation.
Well, and obviously this person was able to fool a lot of others.
Right.
I think, too, though, that when you're caught up with a real need for drugs, when you're caught up with the idea that you have to do this for your own livelihood, you may push those frightening thoughts out of your mind. I don't always think it's somebody who just, you know, I think that what Siobhan said is part of it, but I think another part of it is there's a whole other aspect of it that may force you to do something even when you know it's not the sensible choice.
Yeah. Let's go to Carl from Peshtigo. Hi, Carl.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your fine guests.
Good morning.
It's admirable for what they're bringing across. It's like a reality show of a different sort. What I suggest is to bring across a recording of this show to a program in school for the young students to understand, listen, and be regarded for what the real world is about and what's portentous for them for if they get involved in what they start to pursue.
How do you reach young people?
Well, it's funny that he said that, and I thank you for saying that. We have in the past, and I would really like this fall to start it again, been invited to middle schools. And
really?
Some of the younger women in our group have gone to middle schools and talked to the middle school girls especially, but sometimes to a mixed group, about how easy it is to fall into things that at the time you think are fine, but then a few years later, you'll find out it really has come back and done some very bad things to you. And it works, because if you take someone who is close to their age and somebody who has walked that path, it always just amazes me that after they do these little speaking situations, that the numbers of young people that come up and want to talk to them and want to know, you know, where can they go? They either have a sister or something's happening at home. And it's just an amazing breakthrough. And I would like to continue that, because it does good things for the kids in school, but it also does amazing things for the women who go out, who then feel much more powerful about the fact that their life experiences can be something that can help someone else.
Mm-hmm. Siobhan?
Well, I agree with Donna in that aspect. When you actually have a chance to share your past experiences, it does empower you. It makes you feel like, okay, I'm helping somebody. Now, you don't feel as victimized. You begin to see who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You begin to feel that strength, and you feel the need to help more, to reach out and help more, because that's a feeling that you can't explain, but it's better than the high you get off the drugs or any. It's a different type of high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wow, I really helped. I actually made a difference.
Right.
Instead of destroying my life, I helped another life. So, yes, I do agree with Donna.
Yeah. It is, though, as you were saying that, I'm thinking it's kind of a sorry statement about society that you have to go to schools to tell people that working the streets and doing hard drugs is probably not the way you want to go. I mean, how do we get this way? It makes me think, how do we get this far?
If I had that answer, I think the Benedict Center would have a lot more money and could do a lot more programs. But I think that, you know, sometimes I feel that we just have to deal with what the realities of our lives are like. And yes, if we need to go into the schools to talk, not everybody who's going to listen to those, you know, speakers have problems. But if you can reach the one, the two, the four that are there, that's the amazing part of it. You know, and right. we want people to know that, you know, they... That's the thing about girls. We still live in a society that unfortunately somehow does a number on girls' heads, even if it doesn't mean the absolute, you know, terrible abuse that sometimes we see. But girls, what is it that they say that girls can do really well in school and in sports, and then somewhere around age 11 or 12, maybe they start to change? I hope that there have been enough emphasis on girl power or whatever you want to call it, that we don't see that. You know, when I look at my own six-year-old granddaughter, I want her to see her own strength from now on. And that's what we're trying to do with the older women, is we want them to find their own strength. And that's what's important.
Yeah. Back to phone calls. Carl, thanks for the call. Misty from Beaver Dam. Hi, Misty.
Hi. I'm just calling to say thank you very much for having this program. I really appreciate it. I do think that education plays a big part in how children turn out for the future. I don't think so much it has to do with the way we're raised as children, because sometimes we do come from dysfunctional families, but we turn out okay because mm-hmm. we do have an education. But I do think that education needs to start very early on, even in grade school, even before middle school, because sometimes those children are exposed to these things at a very, very early age. You grow up with an alcoholic stepfather, a drug addicted mother, or mother maybe that is even into prostitution, and you see these things, and this is what you think being an adult is all about. I just think, and I do agree with one of your ladies there, that girls are sort of undervalued. We tend to have low self-esteem looking around us and thinking that most of who we are as a woman, as a child, as a girl, is appearance, how we look and how other people treat us, and that's how we determine our worth. And I think if you put more into the schools as far as social studies and taking a look at the environment around you and how you can contribute to that environment, I really think that would show value to the girls, and that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much, Misty, for the call. Donnie, you want to respond?
Oh, I'm very happy that you called, and I agree with you. I think that if we can get young people involved in other things so that they see themselves as part of the greater world and they see their role in it, we're going to have a lot less problems.
Yeah. I'm always amazed, and it seems to me as though this must be still rampant in our culture. Fill me in on it. But I've lived through the women's movement. Women's roles have changed so significantly. And yet I hear from teenagers in my family that a lot of young people think nothing of Chris Brown's behavior toward his girlfriend beating her up, that was, you know, that's okay. He's a star. We're going to forgive him that. And when I hear you talk about, when you hear it in the lyrics of songs too, and when I hear both of you talking, I'm worried that we haven't come as far as we need to, that somehow we need to be addressing much more fully the issue of how women are treated, for heaven's sake. This is deplorable behavior we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And I come out of that same struggle in the women's movement. And for a while, we thought we had made headway, hadn't we? And we have. We have in many possible, you know, arenas. However, it is exactly what Siobhan said. It's what the caller said. There seems to still be an underlying current that says it's okay if in relationships one person can dominate or control the other.
Right.
And, you know, I know that this is the majority of people who are victimized in relationships are women. But we also have to understand that sometimes women have that role as well. And so I don't want to, you know, be seen here as painting every single person of the opposite gender as bad, because that is not true.
Of course.
And all you have to do is to walk into my program and see that we do have men on our staff. And the men on our staff are strong, and they know who they are, and they give a wonderful model to the women about what a relationship, you know, can really be, and the fact that not every man has an agenda that is going to be used against them. But I think you're right. I mean, we still have, it's a relationship thing, and we really need to continue to work on it, and we need to help our children from the time they're tiny understand their own strength, their own rights in a relationship, but their own responsibilities in a relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Misty, for your call. Let's go to Janice next from La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning. So thank you. I guess I just was kind of commenting, or maybe wanting you to comment on just what you're talking about, the societal. I mean, for me, it's kind of a moral breakdown of our fabric of society. And, you know, that it's almost acceptable in some cases. I know this is tough when people have, they use drugs and this kind of thing, and they can't seem to get out of the hole and thinking that the only thing they can do is prostitution. But, you know, I'm almost talking on the high end of this, quote, escort services, mm-hmm. you know, where the college girls are like, oh, you know, I knew I could make the money, and why not go for it? You know, I mean, this is, where is our respect for ourselves and our body? And there's a book, The Theology of the Body, that you know, just women to respect your body. It's holy, and it's just a shame that we don't have that, like you said, from children on up, that we would not be, you know, we would be taking care of our body, you know, and not being, you know, getting into the thing of selling our bodies. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Siobhan, you want to start?
Well, I was just listening to what the young lady just said, and I've heard a lot of young women say, well, I mean, it's just sex. I'm going to give it away anyway. I'm going to use it anyway. I may as well get paid for it. They have that attitude, you know, whereas, well, I may as well get something out of it. You know, they getting something from me. It's an even trade. They don't look at their bodies as temples. You know, they use them for any type of tools. They use them for tools. They don't look at it as a temple. They don't hold their virtue close to them anymore. It's a money thing out here in the streets with all of them, the young women, the older women, the kids that are coming up. Okay, they're selling drugs at an early age. They're accepting abusive relationships at early ages now. And they've lost their self-esteem. They don't have that self-esteem. So with them, their body is not a temple, as we held ours. So I want to stay a virgin until I get married. And I don't want to, you know, I want to have one boyfriend. I don't want a bunch of boyfriends. They don't hold their bodies like that anymore. They use them as tools to make money for drugs or for trade for favors or things of that nature. It's not always drugs. Sometimes it's favors.
And it's across all of the social strata. I mean, we're not just talking about women that get involved in prostitution. I mean, I think there's an evolution about how people see relationships. I see there's an evolution about how people see commitment. And I don't know where it's going to go. And obviously, I don't have answers. I don't know, you know, I don't know anything. I think that it is an evolutionary process. I mean, there's the book Unhooked talks about, you know, how young people see sexual encounters as not having
yes.
strings attached.
Right.
There was a rabbi on one of the National Public Radio shows talking about the evolution of marriage and how people are making decisions about marriage much later and mm-hmm. often after living together and having children. And so, you know, I can say that we are changing. I think what I want to see is the fact that I want women to see that they can make as much money or more using their mind.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that there we go.
Right.
And so education to us is very important. We have always combined an adult basic education and a GED, HSCD part of what we're doing. We had three graduates walk across the stage in June. And one of the women spoke at a luncheon of one of our friends' organizations, and one of the things that she said was very important to me. She said, when I walked across that stage and had my diploma under my arm, I knew I was no longer a victim.
Yeah, right. Our number is 800-486-8655. Siobhan, tell it through your story or the many women that you're working with at the Sisters Project. When you talk about the high from drugs and the numbing of the pain, et cetera, how do you transition? How did you transition? What makes people decide, okay, I've had it. I'm going somewhere else.
When you decide enough is enough, you're ready for a change, you know it's got to be something better out there. It's more out there than what I'm dealing with here. You have to have your mind made up. Because once your mind is made up, then nothing will deter you from this path, this goal that you're setting for yourself. I want to clean my life up. I want to get a GED. I want to get a job. I want to have a decent home to go to. I want a nice car, you know, parked in front of the house or in the garage. When you decide that you're ready to make that change, then all the help is available for you. But until you make up your mind to do it, there's nothing no one else can do but maybe try and suggest or direct you. Okay, well, listen, I know a place. If you ever change your mind, I know a place where just give you an ear or a shoulder. But look, if you need somebody to talk to, call me. Here's my number. Mm-hmm. So we have those different types of means of support, I should say. Mm-hmm. You know, I cleaned my life up, and then I got out there, and I messed up again. And I came, and I asked Donna, I said, Donna, I messed up. Can I come back? She says, yeah. That you always have a chance. The doors don't close for you when you're trying to make a difference in your life. The doors are open for you. They close when you give up on yourself. See, nobody wants to reach for you. Well, I'm not going to help you get up if you're not going to help yourself get up. I can't pull that dead weight. But if you're supporting just a little of your weight, then I can give you some of the leverage you need.
Yeah. I love when she said, I know a place. Mm-hmm. It's good to know a place, isn't it?
Me too, absolutely. And to have somebody out there that you can talk to.
Yeah. We pause for a moment. We'll return and take more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The horrendous story that came out last week of the fact that the DNA of a suspected serial killer was linked to a seventh woman murdered in Milwaukee, and this is part of an investigation of unsolved homicides that go back some 23 years in the city of Milwaukee. A number of women who have been on the streets murdered, and actually ranging in ages from 16 to 41, this latest round. And investigations have been on for a little while, and then they go nowhere. It got us thinking about life on the streets and got us thinking about the use of drugs, and got us thinking about the Benedict Center, which for many years has done very important work here in the city. There is a program to help women getting off the streets, the Sister Project. We're talking about that, the Women's Harm Reduction Program as well, with Donna Hippis, who is the director of those programs. And Siobhan is also joining us in studio, who has graduated from the Women's Harm Reduction Program. So, did I give the number? I'll do it again. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, the author of Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. Our guest says that it's about the extraordinary way that America has gone marching backward into the 21st century. All right, let's go to some more phone calls. Tara is next from Sheboygan. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to tell you first, I think this is a great topic to address. When they were talking earlier about possible causes for this, I think part of the problem is we live in an age where everybody's on the internet at early ages, and they overexpose themselves with, MySpace, putting all their information online. And I think that gives people a sense of, they're sort of cavalier about things.
It's an interesting point.
I think that they, don't realize that their actions are sometimes inviting trouble in. And I think that because of it, people are sort of, you know, they get involved in situations and they don't realize how bad it is until after it's, you know, disintegrated to what some of these girls have gone through.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point.
It is, and thank you for that. We see people come to us via different means. And we have had the women who have been busted in a escort sting. We have had many young people who have been on Craigslist and are absolutely shocked and appalled that the police department mm-hmm. monitors Craigslist. And so I do agree with you that sometimes we aren't aware that when we put this information out there, it's out there for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it sure is. And there is something about allowing that information. You're somewhat anonymous, although you're not, that people feel free to put incredible things
Absolutely.
About themselves and sexual innuendos
Absolutely.
All over the place and being proud about their sexual activities. It's a whole, I feel so old, it's a whole different world,
well,
isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's difficult because I certainly don't want to come across as someone who is
right.
very prudish. Because we're not. I want people to celebrate their own sexuality because it is a very natural part of who we are. But I also remember what I started with. It's the whole idea of safety.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for your call. And let us go next to Terry from Jefferson. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very interesting show. I know you're talking about girls right now, but I have a son who is struggling to get off of drugs. And you say in Milwaukee it's easy because you know you have to make the choice, and that's fine. But when he made the choice that he wanted to get off because he couldn't afford his habit anymore, there isn't a place to go for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had to support him all the way. We had to pay for the help. We had to pay for the counseling, everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel sorry for people who don't have family to help them because it is hard. I mean, right now he's on the drug Suboxone to try to help him to get off.
Right.
But slowly he's trying, but when you don't have a job, you don't have insurance, you don't have dental insurance, health insurance, anything, what do you have?
Right.
You know, it sounds easy. It sounds like there's help out there, but you know what? It's not that easy. Programs should be more accessible to people.
Mm-hmm. And there isn't enough help out there. I'm sure
no.
you'll attest to that. You just got a grant, but your program was underfunded for a long time.
Well, and we still are, to
right.
be honest with you. I never want anyone to think that I'm saying that it's easy in Milwaukee. It is not easy. We do have, because we are such a population-dense county, we do have some access to help for people who do not have insurance. But that access is finite. And it is very difficult for people to get into good treatment. And I think that maintaining it, and I agree with you, because even in Milwaukee, if you have insurance, that you know precludes you from getting in through the county system. But sometimes your insurance does not offer you what you need. And then people without insurance, I mean, my heart and my hat are off to you because I know how difficult this is and how incredibly expensive and how it can really create major financial problems for a family. But you are trying to help him, and that is what's important. But it is a snapshot of what's needed. We need to stop stigmatizing people who have drug and alcohol problems, and we need to start saying, here's treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We're beginning to see a push in the criminal justice system that is recognizing, at least on some levels, that treatment is much more cost-efficient and much more useful to the individual and the community than incarceration. But we still have a very long way to go.
Yeah. Oh, we're out of time. I'm so sorry because I feel our phone calls are particularly important today, but do you have, I know you need volunteers too, do you have a place to go? I know you are a place to go, but do you have a website or something that would be helpful?
If people check our website, and it's www.benedictcenter.org is our website. There is a place on the website that if you wish to volunteer, or if you wish to send money, but to volunteer. We have a volunteer coordinator, and she's more than willing to talk to people and to see. I mean, my program is one of four, as you mentioned early on. And so one of the things that I always tell people is if you want to make a change, one of the best things to do is get involved in the Benedict Center, because we also are more than happy to have volunteers to do citizen advocacy for changes within the system.
Great. Thank you very, very much. Siobhan, thank you very much for being with us as well. Donna Hippis, who's director of the Women's Harm Reduction Program and the Sister Project at the Benedict Center. Siobhan, also with us, a volunteer who's been through the Women's Harm Reduction Program. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with another hour of Tuesday Morning Conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute before 10, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.